Welcome to this edition of the Bear's Den podcast. I'm Matt Bear, and we are back, finally, with a new episode. It took a while, but we got here. And when you start these things, you have grand ideas on pumping out weekly episodes, or at least somewhere close to that, and then real life for your main job gets in the way, and things kind of slow down a bit. But we've got some new episodes coming out here, hopefully soon, with a few repeat guests as well as some new guests. So excited to roll those out. But the big part is you have these ideas for the guests, and then they've got to say yes, and then it's got to work with your schedule and theirs. But looking forward to pumping out some new episodes here as we're into the basketball season now. And back for this episode, for his third appearance on the show, we've got Grant McGinnis from Prep Girls Hoops to join to preview the Minnesota girls high school basketball season and also recap the recently completed Breakdown Girls Tip-Off Classic, which brings in some of the best teams and players from around the state to play on one weekend in the Metro. Grant shares his thoughts on some of the top performances from that event, along with his take on who the top teams are going to be to watch in each of the four classes for Minnesota girls basketball this season. Before we get going, let's recognize our sponsor, Midwest Basketball Training. If you are looking to hone your skills or amp up your training, you should check out the MBT facilities or their other player development opportunities. And believe it or not, since our last episode, they now have added another facility. And this is located in Rogers to go along with their other locations in Brooklyn Park, Blaine, and Maple Grove. Visit their website at MidwestBasketballTraining.com for more information. Pat Freeman and his team do a great job working with youth around the metro area. Again, that website is MidwestBasketballTraining.com. Also, if you haven't yet, please subscribe to the show or follow wherever you get your podcasts and give a 5-star rating if you like what you're hearing, as that helps get the podcast out there to more people that are looking to hear from our great guests. Now, let's head into the Bear's Den for this episode with Grant McGinnis. All right, excited to get back on the podcast airwaves here and have one of our favorite repeat guests in to preview the girls' high school basketball season, as he watches a lot of games, watches a lot of players. Grant McGinnis, welcome back to the show, Grant.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
You bet. And I was just scrolling through your Twitter feed a little bit here, Grant. You've been everywhere already. High school gyms. I think you were at a North Central college game. You've been watching the Tommies, the Gophers. How many different gyms have you been in already on this early in December?
Gosh, I'd have to look at my mileage book, wouldn't I? But, you know, what's different now is like the season starts out with these big events over Thanksgiving and then the Breakdown Tip-Off Classic. But, you know, it used to be when I first started, I'd go out to a game every night. But now, you know, so many games are available online that I don't go out as much to individual games, but rather I stay home and watch 4 or 5 games in an evening. And that's been really great, particularly for kids that are in fairly remote areas, say up in northern Minnesota. And those kids are getting seen now thanks to video. And so it's a little bit different, but I'm still racking up the miles and I'm still going to see, I don't know, a couple hundred games a year at least.
Yeah, that's great. And as you mentioned, Grant, there were a couple big events already that have happened on the girls' side. You know, their season is about a little over 2 weeks already into it. I think they started right around Thanksgiving time. So maybe if you were to kind of give us a little peek into those folks that were either at those events, Grant, or those of us that weren't able to make those events, maybe give us kind of a recap quickly of some of those that happened.
Well, you know, right after Thanksgiving, you have the Pat Patterson tournament at Hamlin, and you have the Twin Cities Thanksgiving tip-off, which is at St. Thomas Academy. And those between those two tournaments, you have just a plethora of top teams come and play every year. And then this past weekend was the Breakdown Tip-Off Classic. So there were six games Friday night, and there were 16 on Saturday. And we now have a pretty good handle on which way things are trending for some of these top teams. And we got a glimpse at some new players that are coming on the scene. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. And some of the things that we thought preseason might be happening maybe aren't going to happen now, and other teams, you know, kind of jump out. So those are two long, exhausting weekends, and we end up just cranking out all kinds of copy at Prep Girls Hoops on players and teams. And it's really been a lot of fun. I could use a day off, though. That would be good.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. Well, let's jump into the Breakdown Tip-Off Classic, Grant, which was the most recent this past weekend at Hopkins. What stuck out to you the most from Hopkins this last weekend?
Well, I think the one team that was really the biggest surprise was probably Eden Prairie. You know, they went into this year, and the knock on them was, well, they don't have any height. You know, they don't have anybody over 5'10". How are they possibly going to compete? And they've always had a lot of height in the post. What they do have, though, is Tori Schlegel, who's a top 10 junior in the state, already committed to South Dakota, you know, just a comprehensively wonderful, versatile player. And she has got that team flying. And, you know, Ellen Wiese is a very good coach. So they played well this weekend. They're already 4-0. And I think they were a team that wasn't really much in the conversation in 4A. Prior to the season because of that lack of height. And now I think they're very much in the conversation. And, you know, the other teams are, I guess, not all that surprising. The one team that I was really interested to see was Lakeville North. And that's because Andy Birkbaum has returned to coach there. He was there in the 2010-11 era, won a state championship with Rachel Banham. Mm-hmm. And he went off to coach boys in Northfield, and then, you know, has done a number of different coaching things. He's a big AAU coach at North Tartan. Andy is, in my mind, one of the top two or three coaches in the state. He's got a brilliant basketball mind. He's got some really innovative defense. And I think there's a lot of good kids at Lakeville North. And I look at them as like the, you know, they're kind of right there as a team that could be there at the end. The interesting thing was, they went out in the first half against Hopkins and got completely obliterated. It was their first game. They were lost. They clearly did not have their timing. And they went into the half down 16. And they ended up losing the game by 1 point. In the second half, we saw them play like you'd expect an Andy Birkbaum team to play. And that was really exciting. I think they're a team that, you know, we need to pay attention to in addition to some of the usual suspects. And I think that, you know, the other thing that's really intriguing going into this season is, you know, you think about how many years in a row was, you know, Hopkins was like the odds on favorite to win. And every year we went in, we'd say, yeah, well, it's Hopkins and everybody else. And this year, that's not necessarily the case. You know, you've seen their two biggest players, you know, both size-wise and impact-wise, have moved on. You've got Taylor Woodson is at Michigan now, and you have Nunu Agara off to an amazing start at Stanford. But that's left a lot of holes up front, and so the question is, well, what will Hopkins be like? How good will they be? And I think the answer after watching them the last two weekends is they're still going to be very, very good, but, you know, they're hardly an odds-on favorite to win, and that makes it more interesting when you have Minnetonka, St. Michael, Lakeville North, Maple Grove, and some of these other teams in the mix. And I think it's kind of wide open in 4A, and that's different and interesting.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Because like you said, it's typically, you know, Hopkins is always in the mix, and then it's kind of, you know, who else from there, Grant? What would you say was the game that stood out for you the most that day at the Breakdown, Grant?
Well, that one was clearly really impactful. I think you know, there were a number of really good games at the event, but there were some upsets, or what we would perceive to be upsets, at all of the classes, and that was interesting as well. You had a team like Stuartville, which is you know, last year's 3A finalist, projected to be right there again this year, and they kind of took it on the chin, and so you have a team like Delano, which, you know, hasn't really been all that relevant in recent years in 3A, and they were phenomenal. And so, so Delano's 4-0 and looking very good. So I think, 3A is also wide open, and that's pretty exciting. I love it when you just don't really know what's going to happen. I think the other, game that I guess it wasn't an epic game, but it certainly was interesting in and of itself was Benilde played Hopkins in the last game and got blown out. And that's largely because Olivia Olson, who's going to Michigan, is the number one player in the senior class, odds on favorite for Miss Basketball. She broke her hand last weekend. And so she's going to be out for several weeks. And, Benilde without Olivia Olson was no match for Hopkins as they are, constituted today. So that was interesting. And I love watching, the top teams in Class A play. And obviously, Mountain Iron Buell is probably in the driver's seat again. But the team that was really exciting to watch was Hancock. They won the title 2 years ago, and man, they sure look like they might be poised to win it again. But Matt, there are so many games played in such a short period of time that they all kind of run together after a while, and we tend to focus, a little bit more on individuals rather than, teams. And so it's the individual performances are the things that stand out for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned some of those teams that you watch, Grant. For example, like Delano. I've had the fortune of watching some of their young players come through and play at Target Center for some of our youth games, and they've got a really good pipeline coming up. So
Yeah, they do.
they're going to be around for a while.
Yeah, they
And
are. And they have a really nice core right now. I mean, they have a couple of seniors that are both, headed for Division II. Nora Danielson is going to Wayne State, and Taylor Toole is going to Northern State. And in 3-0, in 3A, if you have, a core of veteran scholarship level players like that, that's a big deal. And then they also have a top 20 player from the 10th grade class in Abby Pedala at the point guard spot. And then they have a couple of, really nice supporting pieces as well. Scott Antle, who's a longtime Minnesota high school coach, he's bounced around a little bit, but I think he's sitting on a little bit of a gold mine there, and they might do something this year.
right. So let's you mentioned it, Grant. A lot of the stuff you focus on is individual related too. So let's talk about maybe some of the top performances that you saw that weekend.
Well, I mean, you have to be impressed always with Aaliyah Crump from Minnetonka. She's the number one player in the 2025 class, played for Team USA, nationally relevant recruit. The lineup of teams interested in her services is pretty impressive, and a number of them were in the gym over the weekend. And she's just kind of a really talented, athletic, gifted kid. A little up and down sometimes, but she's really starting to hit her stride now. And I thought she played very, very well. And Minnetonka is a solid team. I mean, you've got Tori McKinney, who's signed with the Gophers, a top five prospect, and then you've got the 10th grader Linnell Wright is top three in that class. And so they have this core of like super talented kids that are really starting to play well together. And of course, pulling all the strings is Brian Cosgrove, who won all of those state titles at Hopkins. And, he's been there a couple of years now. And I think this might be the year that things come together for Minnetonka. So Aaliyah really impressed. No question about that. On the defensive side of things, Elena Bowe from Lakeville North in the second half shut down Liv McGill. It was a dramatic defensive display. Not easy to shut down Liv McGill. Amazing player, nationally ranked top 20 kid, signed with Florida. And Elena showed what can happen with good defense, and that's how things, turned around in that game. Jordan Odie was terrific for Maple Grove. She's a junior Michigan State commit. She turned in a really nice performance on, Friday night. I mentioned Schlegel. I mean, she was terrific as well. So there were a lot of really solid performances across the board. One of note was Finley Onstad from Lakeville South. She's a Kansas State commit. She's always been an amazing shooter, great three-point shooter. Her mom is the coach at Lakeville South and was a big time player for the Gophers, was known back then as Angie Iverson. And Mitch Onstad, her dad played for the Gophers and is a shooting instructor. So you'd expect the kid can shoot, right? She put up 45 points and 9 threes in that game.
Wow.
And it was just fun to, when a player gets in a zone like that, and it's just every time they put the ball up, you start to expect it to go in. That was really fun, and fun to see Finley rewrite a couple of records there for Lakeville South.
Yeah, following in her dad shooting footsteps. That's really fun to see. How about, I think I saw Madden Greenway, I think, was player of the event. Can you talk about her performance maybe a little bit?
I mean, what Madden has done over these first couple of weeks is nothing short of remarkable. I mean, we've seen a lot of amazing stuff from her over the last few years, and state championships and just amazing individual performances. But, you know, she's averaging like 40 points a game right now, which is, you know, truly an astonishing number. The cool thing at the breakdown was they went up against Providence Academy, went up against Hortonville, Wisconsin. And they are one of the top, you know, teams in Wisconsin, and they're led by Rainey Wilson. Rainey is the number one junior in the Cheese State, but she plays her AAU basketball with Greenway here at North Tartan, and has played here for a number of years, I think since 2020, perhaps. And so the two of them know each other very well. Rainey is a highly accomplished player, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think Madden went for 43 and Rainey had 41. And it was one of those games where it's like, well, anything you can do, I can do better. And, you know, of course, they both teams have really good supporting cast full of college bound type talent. But, you know, Madden is she's very talented and very athletic, but it's her sheer will and competitiveness that really makes her special. I don't know sometimes how she gets out of bed in the morning, because she takes a ton of punishment at 5'6" or 5'7" or whatever she is. But man, this kid can turn a game on its ear. And she is entertaining. Tomorrow, by the way, big event down in Goodhue. The Madden Greenway show is coming to Goodhue for the afternoon. And that should be a lot of fun, because they're a Class A contender. And anytime a player of Madden's caliber comes to a smaller community, that's always a big deal and always a lot of fun. So that's tomorrow at 3 in Goodhue. Might have to make my way down there for that, too.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Fuel it up, Grant. Head down there to Wildcat Country and watch that one. So I wanted to jump in real quick, Grant, and get your opinion just on class by class level, who maybe you think are some of the favorites this year, if we could do that real quick. And we'll start maybe with 1A, I think, and go there. For those that may recall, the defending state champion is Mountain Iron Buell. Jeff Buffetta and his crew finally were able to break through and get that elusive state crown that I know he was desperately chasing. And so it was neat to see them accomplish that goal last year. But do you look at them as kind of the repeat favorite, Grant, or how are things looking in the 1A area?
Yeah, I think you got to figure that they're there. I mean, in Class A, if you have one of the best players in the country in your lineup, that is such a huge advantage. I mean, there are very few Division I kids come out of Class A. And so Jordan Zubich is a North Carolina commit. I mean, doesn't get much higher than that, right? Mm-hmm. Might be the best long distance shooter in the country. Just a really elite talent. And then she has this supporting cast of great foot soldiers that, you know, Jeff always turns out these incredible shooters, and year after year, he always seems to find new players to plug in the holes left by graduated players. And, you know, right now the biggest player in that supporting cast is Hallie Savala. She's a top 75 kid who has signed at Jamestown, and she's just a warrior. I mean, this kid can shoot it also, but she just does all the little things that, you know, win basketball games. And so I think, you know, at that level and Class A level, a player like Jordan Zubich is going to make all the difference in the world. I do think that there are a number of other teams that are in the running, but Class A has become very stratified into, you know, I can't remember how many schools are in Class A. It's over 200. And there's really only a half a dozen that are serious contenders for a championship. There's lots of good teams, but, you know, the top ones are really above the others by a fair notch. Goodhue moved back to Class A this year. They were in Class 2A the last couple of years. They would have to be a contender. They're led by Elizabeth Gadient, who's an outstanding point guard, has signed with MSU Mankato. And they have a really nice power forward in Kendall Lodermeyer, great rebounder. And, you know, Josh Weamy just does an outstanding job with that program year after year after year. So I would say they're a contender. As I said, Hancock played really, really well. You know, they won the title 2 years ago, and then they had a coaching change. And when Chad Neuse took over last year, he implemented a little more up-tempo style, a little more pressure defense. And so they're playing with a lot of pace, and they have a scholarship-level point guard in Caitlin Roloff. And if you have, again, you know, that one elite talent, especially at the point guard position in Class A, wow, that makes such a difference. And they have a nice supporting cast, some nice pieces as well. I think another one team that did not play particularly well, or hasn't played particularly well yet, is Buffalo Lake, Hector Stewart. But I think they're a contender as well. They have senior twins, Christy and Rachel Kotke, who are going to St. Cloud. And then they have a 10th grade guard, Lily Hubin, who's a dynamic young player. And they're a team that also plays with pace. They play very well together. The Kotke twins are, I mean, they're just warriors as well, both top 50 prospects. So again, if you have those kind of kids at Class A, that makes a big difference. And I'd say the other team that I think you really have to consider as a contender this year is Sleepy Eye. They're off to a 6-0 start. They didn't play in any of these events yet, but I've watched them online a couple times. And they're led by Cadence Hess, or is it Hesse or Hess? I never remember. Her mom is the coach. She's a top 25 kid, and she's signed with Southwest Minnesota State. And then they have a big power forward in Bria Mertz, who's going to Briarcliff. So you'll notice the one commonality in these six teams is they all have one or two big stars that carry the load, and they all have kids that play a lot of AAU basketball. And in Class A, if you don't have kids that play AAU basketball, don't play basketball year-round, it shows, and that's largely what has created the separation.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up, Grant, because I'm from a small town, and I know just opportunities are different when you're kind of on the outskirts. But how much do you think that really has played a role in kind of some of these top teams being where they're at, developing some of these kids kind of year round?
Well, it's absolutely the X factor. I'd say in the case of, a team like Mountain Iron, they have always done extensive summer activities and played a lot of summer ball. And Jeff Buffetta has an AAU team that plays kind of a part-time schedule. So they have kind of always done that. But a team like Hancock was very much a local program for a long time. And a few years ago, they put together their own little AAU team. And then some of their kids moved on to the Minnesota Comets out of St. Cloud. And they made all the difference because their kids are playing together all year. And you're up against way better players than you play with on a regular basis in the high school season. And they just get used to playing a lot of games, a lot of physical games, and a tough schedule. And it just makes them that much better players, where, you know, the traditional model was, you know, you play maybe a little bit here and there in the summer, but they're just doing other things. And then you got to come back and pick up basketball once again. And there are still tons of programs that do that. But none of these top programs are doing that anymore. And I think you've seen this kind of transition in greater Minnesota into a sort of a new generation of younger coaches. And many of them are involved in AAU. To be honest with you, like the previous generation of coaches, I'd say the vast majority were anti-AAU. And the other sport coaches in high school, so the softball coaches, et cetera, they were anti-AAU. And they wanted their kids to focus on the school. It was all about the school. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's one of the best things about Class A. You know, they play multiple sports and they're a big part of their community. I think that's great. But the schools where you have cooperation between the various coaches and where they've recognized the value of AAU basketball, or whether it's elite summer or softball or volleyball, whatever it is, the ones that have embraced that and work with each other and make that happen for the kids, those are the teams that are winning. It's very, very clear. Those are the teams that are winning. And if you look at, if you want to know who's going to be good in Class A, just look at fifth, sixth, seventh grade basketball right now at the AAU level. It's not hard to see. you know, where those kids are coming from. I think the other things that's super exciting is it used to be thought, well, if you were from a long way away, you maybe couldn't play AAU. But some families have made this commitment. They're traveling a great distance to come to the city to play largely every weekend. And their kids are so much better than the other kids now at a young age. The skill level, the development level, the experience level, it's not close. And so you have in these programs, you have seventh and eighth graders that are the best players in their programs. And that's been, you know, that's really upset the apple cart. But it's resulted in teams that are just really, really good.
Yep. No, I think that's a very interesting point, Grant, that you bring up. And it's, again, not everyone has the same resources that all families have, or, you know, they might have the family farm or something they need to stay right back and work on, or other sports or whatever. But the thing I like about AU is it's there for those that want it or can do it. But then if you're not able to, then you need to kind of rely on your coach from your town to kind of put together these opportunities. And I think it's neat, almost recognition for those coaches that are going that extra mile when they do have that success too.
Yeah. And you're also seeing a lot of cooperation between families. You know, I know of one case, I won't mention the names, but there was one case where the daughter is an outstanding prospect, a Division I prospect, but they were only able to play with the local team because they have six or seven kids. And it just wasn't really practical, you know, to be running around. So she joined a different team with another player from her high school, a different AAU team. And the other parent was going to be driving anyway. So now he is driving their daughter too. And, you know, so you see that kind of thing happening. And then you see more, you know, just like local AAU teams that are not playing at the highest level, but they're getting out and playing with kids from a region. And that's, you know, happening as well. But, you know, like, as you say, like distance and money and all those things are factors, and they also affect kids in the city as well. Mm-hmm. I guess if there's one trend, this is a tangent, if there's one trend that we're seeing that's really become obvious over the last few years, and that is you have to have resources, you have to play AAU, and you have to have training if you're going to reach the highest level. And you have to have the resources to go on college visits. And so whereas it used to be back in the day, the kids from Minnesota that went off to play Division I basketball were the most athletic kids, right? They were the most naturally gifted. They were, you know, getting opportunities to play locally and so forth. Minnesota now produces players that have been forged. They may not be the best athletes, but they play great team basketball, high IQ, highly trained. So they understand the game and play at a high level of skill. And we churn out a ton of those kids. Well, you can't do that if the parents can't invest the time and resources to do that. But that's kind of where we're at right now. And that's, you know, Minnesota produces a ton of great team basketball players as a result of that.
Yeah.
But it's great to see all these Class A kids rising to the top. And I think, you know, I'm going to take some credit for that too, because, you know, with the things like prep hoops and junior all-star, our competitor, you know, we have really made an effort to publicize kids from outstate. And there are tons of them, but you really have to work to see them. And we've worked at that. And now with video, you know, with the live streaming, it's a lot easier to do. But it used to be if you were a kid from Walker, it was pretty hard for you to get seen. If you were a kid from International Falls, it was pretty hard for you to get seen. Most of those kids get seen now. They get written about. The colleges learn about them because of that, and their opportunities are being created. So not everything about social media is great. Not everything about, you know, the youth sports industry, quote unquote, is great. But that is the biggest benefit, is kids who want it and are willing to work for it now have much greater opportunities to do that.
Yep. Absolutely. That's a great point. So let's jump to 2A here quick, Grant, and maybe this one will be a quick discussion, but the defending champion again, Providence Academy, two-time defending state champion. But I think they've got, you know, a list of competitors still. You know, the team they beat in the finals, Albany, I think is going to come back very strong. And then there's some others that could play a role in there too, Grant. What are your thoughts on 2A?
Well, to me, there's three teams that are a notch above everybody else. So one is Providence, two is Albany, and then the third is Minnehaha Academy. You know, Addie Mack is a brilliant point guard for Minnehaha. They have a new coach, Damian Lollar. They're off to a 6-0 start, and they're a team that has a lot of experience and a lot of – they don't have a ton of depth. You know, they're really only going 6-7 deep, which is not uncommon at 2A. But I'd say that, you know, one of those three teams is likely to emerge as the state champion. After that, I think you have three other teams that all of them are driven by star players. I think the biggest surprise so far is Jordan is off to a 5-0 start. And they looked really, really good both weekends. They've played great. Crosby Ironton is 3-0, and they're led by Tori Orline, who's one of the top players in the country. And so they would have to be a contender. And then the other one is Duluth Marshall, and they have two elite players in their lineup too. Reagan Juneman is a top 15 junior with Division I offers. And then the most exciting player in the state right now, no, it's not Madden Greenway, in my opinion. It's the eighth grader, Chloe Johnson from Duluth Marshall, who is, might be the best 2028 point guard in the country. So coming out of seventh grade, going into eighth grade, she played 17U, which is the highest level, oldest level in AAU basketball. And she played on the EYBL circuit, which is the best circuit for all Iowa Tech. So she played 5 years up. And the only player that anybody has been able to tell me that ever did that before was Sabrina Ionescu, who played at Oregon, is now at the New York
Liberty. Yeah, she's decent.
Yeah, she's decent. She turned out okay. So, you know, Chloe's only an eighth grader, but she's a 5'11", 170-pound eighth grade point guard. Just got offered by Maryland, has offers from Minnesota, and the list is getting long already. She's pretty exciting. And when you have a player like that, even if you don't, you know, the team doesn't have a ton of size, but when you have a player like that, as we saw with Greenway, anything is possible. So I would say those are the six. I think you can't count out Scott Bergman's Sauk Center teams ever. They have a nice point guard and a 6'3 post. And I think, obviously, you can't ever discount Mike Dreyer at New London Spicer, winning his coach in Minnesota history. Somehow, year after year after year, they always get good by the time when it really matters. And so I wouldn't at all be surprised if somehow New London Spicer ended up in the mix as well.
So really, really quick, Grant, on Coach Dreyer, because I'm going to hopefully have him on an upcoming episode. As you mentioned, he is the winningest coach, boys or girls, in the state, which I don't think a lot of people are aware of. He did pass Bob McDonald, who's over 1,000 wins. Mike is ahead of him. But what are your thoughts on him, Grant, as far as why he's been able to have such longevity and success there at New London?
Well, you know, they're always about team basketball and defense. And he's been, you know, one of the ones that would say is late to the party on the whole AAU thing. And that's understandable. I mean, he's been the head coach there for 50 years.
Right.
And he does things his way, and they work very well. The other comparable one would be Marshall, you know, Dan Westby at Marshall, very similar. They're kind of old school. And they have had success because they play together year round in, you know, in other circuits, not necessarily in AAU. And they play the same way. He's been able to plug and play different players over the years. I think he's on, might be on the third generation now of players. And they just play the same way. They play hard. The amazing thing, though, is, you know, how much coaching has changed, right? You know how much the atmosphere around high school sports has changed, et cetera. I wasn't around in my 1970, but it looks, from what I've seen and heard and read, is that Mike coaches the same way now as he did then. Mm-hmm. And sometimes on the bench, he just makes you cringe a little bit. He's so loud and voice, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a little bit scary. But what's cool is, you know, like sometimes you look and go, wow, I wouldn't want my kid to do that. But every single person that I have ever met who played for Mike Dreyer loves the guy. Absolutely loves the guy, has nothing but great things to say about the guy. And obviously they had success when they played there. So he gets invited to a lot of weddings and, you know, and all that kind of thing. He's made an indelible mark on the girls basketball community. I do not know him personally, But you have to admire his work. He's had a huge impact.
Yeah, that's probably an understatement, but yeah, he's racked up the wins, like you said, racked up a lot of great teams and relationships he's built over the years. So let's jump into 3A here, Grant. Again, the defending champion there is Benilde St. Margaret's, but as you mentioned, their star players just come up with a big injury, which will keep Olivia out for a while. So how do you kind of see that impacting the landscape in 3A, Grant? And do you see them kind of repeating once she's back healthy?
Well, I think if she comes back healthy in January, or then I think, you'd have to say they are the odds-on favorite. They have the experience and they have a lot of talent. But I do think that 3A is pretty wide open. You have, I think, surprisingly so far, the record is only 2-2, but De La Salle has been very, very impressive. Anisha Scott is a tremendous point guard, and their big post player, Jordan Johnson, she's just playing incredible basketball. The sad thing is she just signed to play volleyball at UC Santa Barbara. So we're going to lose her from basketball, but we get her for a little while longer. And she's been just played really two great tournaments. Alexandria is definitely a contender. Wendy Kohler, over 500 wins. You talk about, elite coaches, been there forever. They have a Division I forward in Hadley Toole, and they have a cadre of good guards, just a whole bunch of really good guards. They move the ball and they play really nice basketball. So I think they're a serious contender. We talked about Delano. We wouldn't have said that a month ago. I wouldn't have thought they were a contender, but I do think that now. Stuartville is struggling a little bit to get past the graduation of Haley Strum and Keely Steele, who were their backcourt for 5 years. So they're adjusting, but they're just loaded with talent, and I think they'll be there at the end. I think the one team that has played way better than anticipated certainly caught me off guard, which they also did 2 years ago when they won the state championship, and that's Totino Grace. Mary Dengerud can coach. She was a former college coach, longtime high school coach. She is terrific. And the way they played at the Thanksgiving tip-off was just super impressive. They're playing really well together and moving the ball. They have two strong guards in Chloe Nuss and Maria Radabaugh, and they're playing beautiful basketball. And nobody ever picked them 2 years ago, and we should learn our lesson and not overlook them now. I think one outsider, you want a sleeper team, I'd look at St. Peter. Bob Southworth has a very nice veteran team with a lot of ability. They've been together a long time, and they're 4-0. They looked really good on Saturday night. And so that's a team that I would classify as a potential sleeper. And of course, as we mentioned, Marshall, they have a really nice young point guard in Talia Bigler, but basically they play team basketball. They start late because all their kids play volleyball, so they've only played one game so far. That's their normal. I hate the way they play. It's football, it's not basketball. They basically go out there and try and beat you up, and they've had a lot of success with it. And so I would expect that the Marshall Tigers might be there in March.
Okay. Yeah, we'll keep an eye out for all those teams this season, Grant. And then let's get to the big schools here. 4A, again, the repeat or the defending state champion there, which always seems to be around, just like Hopkins, is St. Michael Albertville. They held on last year for a tight one over Hopkins in the championship game. But as we mentioned, there's a lot of good contenders. I think on the 4A side, Grant, you mentioned Minnetonka, Eden Prairie, some of those other ones. How do you see 4A playing out?
Well, I do think that, when with Tessa Johnson and Piper Carlson graduating from STMA, it was not really clear how they would do or how long it would take them to adapt. I mean, you lose Tessa Johnson at South Carolina, that's kind of a big loss, but they've looked really, really good. They're 5-0. They played great at the breakdown, and they're kind of led by three really, really elite players. You've got Jakayla Kraft as a senior guard, has signed at Seton Hall. And you have Abby Hoselton is a junior who's got multiple Division I offers, and you have Cale Jahnke's a sophomore, top five kid, multiple Division I offers. So when you have that kind of core, you have the potential to be good, and they look really, really good so far. I think the one team, so obviously Minnetonka, Hopkins, St. Michael, Lakeville North, and Maple Grove, Eden Prairie. The one other team that you have to add into that mix, or two really, one is Wayzata. They're young this year, but they are very, very talented, very deep. And they're not playing at their peak level yet. It's going to take them a little while to get their act together, but that's a team that you cannot count out. And I think the other team that's been a very pleasant surprise is Chaska. You know, we thought with Kennedy Sanders graduating and two other college level players that they would struggle a little bit. Man, they look great. They're 3-0 and playing some really nice basketball. And don't forget Rosemount. They lost by one last night to Blaine, which is a big upset. They defend and their lineup is loaded. And Chris Orr can coach. And so mark my words, Rosemount is going to be a factor in one way or other before we're done.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that Maple Grove group, Grant? Cause I know they have a lot of talented, you know, kind of sophomore, junior type players. What are your thoughts on them for this year from what you've seen so far?
I mean, on paper, they look fantastic. They're 4-0. Jordan Odie is their undisputed leader. She's a junior already committed to Michigan State. Claire Stern is off to a great start, senior committed to NDSU. And they have another three or four kids that'll probably play Division I basketball eventually. So they're very deep. Mark Cook is an experienced guy. You know, he's been there, I think, 18 years. But they've never been able to get over the top. You know, they're always right there. They're always a very good team. And, you know, maybe this is the year. Jordan Odie is a heck of a leader, and maybe she can carry them. They played great on Friday night. And they're a very nice squad. And they're certainly in that pack. Which one emerges from the pack? Well, that's going to make the season interesting. And there's no obvious answers at this point.
Yeah. How much of it do you think comes down to as well, Grant, like who's in your section? You know, because I think a lot of times, you know, if you have, you know, number one in the state, and then the fourth best team in the state in the same section, you know, that I think plays a lot into it as well, right?
Yeah, so we don't have 4 hours to discuss that. So, but I will say this, you know, I wrote my final piece on the breakdown last night. And what I said in there was, what I'll say again to you is, the breakdown is the tournament that has all the teams and all the players. The state tournament does not. And, you know, you look at like all these teams we've talked about that are at the top, they're all from the Lake Conference. And they're all from the same area. And so they're not all going to be there. And that's really unfortunate, but that's how it breaks down. I don't have the sections in front of me to do an analysis of that. You know, they have all changed again this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a whole other discussion. The coaches are pushing for a 64-team tournament seated like the NCAAs, where you'd have the real winners there. But the high school league just passed another resolution last week committing to having representation from all corners of the state at their events. And I think there's, you know, there's a case to be made for that as well. So, yeah, this, you know, it Maple Grove has not quite been able to get over the hump, but maybe this is the year they'll do it.
So that's kind of an interesting thing you brought up. And I think it's kudos to breakdown, Grant. Like you mentioned, not all of the best teams make it to state. And there's a reason for that. We could go into a number of different things, but I also think that's highlights what the guy, Justin and Dean and them are doing at the breakdown. So you can see all these players, because it is hard to win. It is hard to advance and get to a state tournament. So I think that's what's really cool about these events, is it gives you the opportunity to watch these players. I think that's a great point you brought up.
Yeah. And you know, the stats on that, I have them in front of me here. You look at like the number of great teams that were there. I mean, it was 9 of the top 10 teams in 4A played. There were 4 of the top 5 in 3A, the top 6 in 2A, 3 of the top 4 in 1A. And then you have, you know, players. It was just like all of the best players, not all, but the vast majority of the best players were there. And, you know, I think maybe people don't realize, but these kind of organizations like Breakdown, they don't exist in very many places. They're the biggest and the best in the country at putting on these events between high school teams all year long. And the coaches and programs have come to trust them to put on a great show. And I work with Dean on the matchups and trying to put together some of these. And I know they work really hard at trying to get the right teams there and to make it happen. And, you know, the fans and the teams are the beneficiaries of that. And every year Justin comes up with some new marketing thing that adds to the fun. This year, you know, now all their games are on the NSPN network and streaming, and that's a huge addition. And then this year they added they had like an interview booth with Mike Peden and a couple of other guys where they throughout the day interviewed players and coaches. Another nice value add that just adds to the you know, kind of the aura of the event. The one thing that a number of coaches said to me who were there for the first time or just the second time is how this type of event helps prepare their kids if they should ever get to the state tournament. Because there's a lot of distractions, a lot of hoopla, a lot of stuff they don't see on a normal, you know, Saturday afternoon at Buffalo Lake Hector Stewart. And this prepares their kids for, you know, the craziness that is the state tournament. Obviously, it's not quite the same thing, but it's a high pressure event, a lot of eyeballs. I mean, the number of college coaches in the gym again this year was amazing. It was like a who's who of college basketball. And so, yeah, you know, Minnesota's lucky to have Breakdown. We're lucky to have all these events. And for us as evaluators and, you know, media people, wow, what a great opportunity to see all these kids in one place at one time.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I know we wanted to just touch on real quick too, Grant, is the new addition to high school basketball this year with it being the shot clock coming on board. How, if at all, have you noticed that affecting the girls' high school games so far?
Well, with these top teams, it really hasn't had a large effect, except in one situation, and that is where you have a really good team nursing a lead. And so
to me, that's the number one place where you'll see it, Grant, is the end of the game when so-and-so's up six or five with a minute left.
Yeah. So traditionally teams like Hopkins and Minnetonka could, you know, they have the high skilled guards and they could dribble it out and can't do that anymore. So we have seen that. I do also think it's also having a large impact at Class A, not with the elite teams, but with the vast, you know, number of teams that play a slower basketball, more traditional basketball, walk it up the floor, ball movement, but not at a high pace. So it is affecting them to a certain degree, but they'll adapt. You know, that's just a very much a short-term thing. But that end of game stuff, wow, that's so much better. And there are a couple of teams that have, you know, specialized in low scoring games and long possessions. And, you know, I don't really want to talk about them because I think it's kind of a negative thing, but, and I try and avoid negatives. We got too much of that in the world already. But there are certain teams that would love to win by scoring 40 points and just skip the basketball back and forth and back and forth, but they can't do it anymore. And a couple of them are struggling right now. But I think it's a great addition. I, few hiccups with clock operation and that kind of thing, but all good so far. Everybody's pretty happy as far as I know.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And I think that is the number one thing that I'll look forward to seeing the most, Grant, is the end of the game when there's 2 minutes left and someone's trying to just milk it, the clock, and just pass it around. Like, yeah, that's great strategy, but it's not exciting. I don't think it's really how the end of a game should be played out per se. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how this kind of impacts those games, especially when we get down, you know, like those section final games or state tournament games. And that comes into play. That'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah, you know, that infamous boys final there a few years ago, that I think, you know, that's a classic example. There was a section game a few years ago, Marshall and Waseca, where Marshall held the ball. Personally, my opinion, anybody that stands at the center court and has their player hold the ball, I think that's a firing offense. It should never happen, and they should never be allowed to coach. That's my opinion. That's what Dan Westby did. You know, against Waseca, the final score was 17-10. And I think that's a disgrace. So now that we have the shot clock, that's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
There, I'll get off my soapbox.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, another thing that I wanted to highlight too, Grant, is we've talked about this before in other episodes, is just where the girls' game's at in Minnesota. It's being played at a very high level. And I jumped on the rankings, you know, which again, what do they mean? Who knows? But it's kind of fun to see at least some notoriety, and it's quite big for a lot of Minnesota players here. I mean, you brought up these players, Grant, but just the 2024 class, we've got three players in the top 68, according to ESPN, you know, Olivia Olson and Liv McGill right next to each other at 15 and 16, and then Jordan Zubich at 68. And then we've got, you know, Leah Crump in the top 10. She's at number 6 for the 2025 class, along with Jordan Oti, who's at 43. And then Madden Greenway, you know, at 17 for that 2026 class. So it's really nice to see them being recognized, but also just the high level of play we have at the girls' game, right, Grant?
Yeah, they don't rank large numbers of players in the younger classes, but Tori Orline from Crosby Ironton should be in there and is in some of the national top 50s as well for the class of 26. So she should be in there. And the best player of 2027, Maya Wilson from Hill Murray now, was at Matamidi. She's a nationally relevant player too, going to be ranked and it'll be interesting to see where she ends up, probably a top 30, 40 player nationally. So yeah, we're, and of course I mentioned Chloe Johnson. She's going to be a top player as well. So yeah, we're really lucky. I mean, it's not just that, it's the depth too. We got 25, 30 kids going to Division I every year, 50 kids going to Division II. I mean, we truly, I think Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin produce more basketball players per capita than anywhere else. There are states that produce more, like Florida, that have huge population. But per capita, we are producing the most scholarship level basketball players. And I hear this every week from coaches, especially those coming here for the first time. They're just blown away by not only the depth of talent, but the way we play. And, you know, Minnesota produces team basketball players who play the right way. They play at both ends of the floor. They show up, work hard, go to class, do all those, check all those boxes that college coaches need to stay employed. And, you know, I think it's just a great time to be involved. And, you know, women's basketball, women's sports in general is just exploding, as you know, Matt. Mm-hmm. And it's just an exciting time. You know, I look back to, you know, I'm 60. Okay, so you look back to what opportunities girls had back in the day, and it was painful how little opportunity they had. And now you have players in Minnesota being offered six figures to play college basketball. That's unbelievable. And really, we could debate that whole thing for a long time, too. But I just think it speaks to the interest in the women's game and finally the realization that people do want to watch. And they will watch and they will buy the products that are surrounding the game and all of that. And I just think it's a game whose time has come.
Yeah. And speaking of a game people wanted to watch, Grant, the local talent that was a top ranked recruit, Paige Beckers, and the UConn Huskies show came to town here recently as they took on the Gophers, handing them their only loss, ironically. But I know a lot of people, I wasn't able to be there myself, but I talked to a lot of people that were there, over 10,000 fans at the barn that night. I believe you said that you were there yourself, Grant. What was it like being in the stands and kind of taking in the atmosphere for that game?
Oh, it was a happening. Yeah, it was something else. You know, I go to the Gopher games with my daughter. She has the season tickets and she actually is scouting with me and doing research and stuff. And I turned to her during the pregame warmup. I said, you know, if there is an accident in this building tonight and the roof caves in, there's going to be 5,000 basketball positions open tomorrow because every great kid in the state was there. You know, it was just a crazy atmosphere. It was so much fun. And I think everybody was, you know, everybody was just kind of proud. You know, obviously Paige was the big attraction, but I think probably honestly 75-80% of the crowd was there to cheer for the Gophers. And and they're off to a great start. And the core of their lineup is all Minnesota kids. And that was exciting. And now the Iowa game is sold out as well, coming up in February. It actually has sold more tickets than the UConn game because people want to see Caitlin Clark. And the funny thing about that is if you follow AAU basketball here and you've watched AAU basketball the last 5 years, we've seen Caitlin Clark against Paige Beckers a dozen times. It happens regularly when these elite players come here and play. But to see them on the biggest stage like this now is pretty exciting. And kudos to Don Plitzewite, who's off to a great start as a Minnesota coach. And I think we also need to mention the impact of having St. Thomas now playing Division I. Unfortunately, the Star Tribune and other local media, I'm not sure if they're quite aware that they exist yet, because there's been almost zero coverage. But, you know, it's really a big deal having a mid-major team here because the vast majority of kids that come out of Minnesota to Division I are mid-major kids. And it creates nice opportunities for them. And also, we now get to see all those other kids who come in on the other mid-major teams to play here. Last week, Iowa State was here, by the way, and next week, Wisconsin will be here playing on campus in St. Thomas. And so kudos to Ruth Sin, who's been leading that transition over there into D1. And they got a big win last night on the road. Yeah, we're lucky. We are really, really lucky. And if you're a basketball fan, you like the women's game, you're in the right place.
Yeah, and it was just a shame, Grant, that we only had the one Division I school, and it's just so nice to see now that we have two in this state. And I'm guessing somewhere down the road that that number will increase eventually, as we a lot of our neighbors, Iowa, Wisconsin, and them have more than we do, which is just it's hard to fathom.
Well, there's so much resources it takes to get into it now. St. Thomas is investing north of $200 million, and that's what it takes to be successful. You got to build buildings and you got to hire staff and all of that stuff. And kudos to them for taking it on. It's a big task. And the men's team has done very well. The women's team is starting to find its footing. When that new arena opens, that's going to be a game changer as well. And yeah, I think it's really a great addition, and we are lucky to have it. They have a nice product over there too. Ruth's teams can defend, and if you're into defensive basketball, man, they can defend. So really fun, and the half of their team are from in-state, so that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, come out and check out some of the local girls at, like you said, Grant, both the Gophers and the Tommies. So, speaking of other games, Grant, I know we mentioned the couple of big early season events, but if you had to mark a couple of games that you're looking forward to later in the year on the high school level that are must watch games, do you have any kind of earmarked right now that are going to be big ones that people should get out and check out in person?
Well, Hopkins Wayzata is always the granddaddy, I would say that one. And I think there's two meetings scheduled between Providence and Minnehaha. So those are always great too. Lots of emotion there. You're talking about Addie Mack against Madden Greenway. Does get any better than that? So I think those are the ones that, mean the most to me. Also, the Minnetonka Hopkins takes on more meaning now with Brian Cosgrove. The former Hopkins coach now at Minnetonka. They're still running some of his plays at Hopkins. So that's always a good one too. I guess if I had to pick just one though, Providence and Minnehaha, that'd be it for me. Those ladies can play.
Nice. Yeah, for those people that want to check out those games, look them up and get in your tickets early probably, because those games I'm guessing will probably sell out. But again, could you remind us, Grant, all the great content and everything that you're putting out? Where can people find you and your work these days?
Yeah, so the website where we publish most of our content is prepgirlshoops.com, prepgirlshoops.com. And there's some free stuff there. Mostly it's behind a paywall, but $100 a year is a pretty good deal for as much coverage as we provide if you're into girls basketball, and there are plenty of people who are. That's the place. I'm on Twitter at GMACHoops, GMACHOOPS. And been lucky enough to build a big following there. We're trying to, dip into St. Thomas ball and Gopher ball and different things on that platform too, now that they have the long form tweets available, which is very cool. So that those are the main places. And you'll probably find me in a gym somewhere too.
Yeah, absolutely. Any favorite concession items that you're looking forward to as well, Grant, that you like to pick up during the season?
I'm going to disappoint you, Matt, and tell you the only thing I ever buy is a bottle of water.
That's it.
Because unless we're there for like a super long, I was at Hopkins for 13 hours on Saturday, I did buy a sandwich. But that's not the best food to eat if you're going to be in the gym all the time. So I always try and eat a proper meal before or after the game. Yeah, so sorry, can't help you there.
Nope, all good, all good. I can appreciate that, but maybe sneak in a popcorn or a soda just to get a little caffeine kick every once in a while.
Well, when I go up to St. Michael, Ken Hamry, the coach there, is one of the nicest guys in the world. And he is always trying to give me a meal. First of all, I don't want to be given anything because because I don't want to have my opinions tainted by food and beverage. But I have succumbed and had their hot dogs up there a couple times, and they are very good. I confess I do like hot dogs.
Nice. Love it. Well, thanks again for joining us, Grant. We'll keep an eye out for all of the articles and tweets and et cetera that you're putting out to highlight these teams and players during the year, and look forward to having you back on again in the future.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for supporting girls basketball, and thanks for all your work you do to get youth teams in on the court at Target Center and make all that happen too. That's a big deal.
Yeah,
So
you bet.
thanks for all that you're doing on in the basketball community.